So we're now ready to move to the third matter on our calendar today. So if the attorneys for that matter are in the courtroom, you can settle yourselves in at council table. Please come forward. And just so we can continue to keep our oral record going, I'll ask the marshal to call the third matter on our calendar. Council, you can just take whatever time you need to settle in and be seated. And I see that council are seated at table. I will make just a few quick remarks. Take whatever time you need. I don't mean to rush you. So we are looking forward to hearing your arguments today and having a conversation. I'll remind you of just a couple of things that you're probably well aware of, but I just want to take a moment to remind you. So the podium and lectern are adjustable in a couple of ways. One is the microphone, and so please take a moment to make sure that's pointing right at you so that we capture all of your remarks for our recording today, as well as it gives a little amplification. And then the height is also adjustable, and there's a button underneath, so take that time to make sure you're comfortable before you start the conversation. And then the very final thing is to have our record be crystal clear. Please state your name before you start to speak, and then identify as well the party that you represent. So with that, you can go ahead, counsel for appellant.
May it please the court. My name is Erica Mador. I am an assistant Mille Lacs County attorney, and I represent the appellant, State of Minnesota, in this state's pretrial appeal. Your Honors, there are two issues for consideration before the court today. The first is whether the odor of marijuana in a motor vehicle creates probable cause to search that vehicle. The second issue is whether the pat search conducted of respondent was reasonable in this case.
Counsel, could you start with the second issue first?
I could, Your Honor. The facts in this matter are essentially undisputed. This was a state trooper who responded to a vehicle that was crashed in a ditch. She was there as a motorist assist. She, upon approaching the vehicle, smelled what she described as an overwhelming odor of marijuana. And she, in working with the respondent driver and with his passenger, noted that they were particularly uncooperative and hostile. So when she seized respondent in order to begin a search of the vehicle, she conducted a pat search of the respondent. So, turning to that issue first, I should note the district court held that because law enforcement lacked a basis to seize respondent at all, they began with that premise in assessing the reasonability of the pat search. They also made some cursory findings that the pat search was unreasonable. I'm asking this court to reverse the district court's findings on that. The factors in considering whether a pat search is reasonable, the standard comes from State versus Flowers, whether a reasonably prudent officer would fear for her safety under the circumstances, whether there's reasonable, articulable suspicion to believe that the person is armed and dangerous. If that is the case, the officer can conduct a brief pat down of the outer clothing for weapons. It's a five-factor test. It is an objective test under the totality of the circumstances. The factors include the number of officers on the scene, the nature of the suspected crime, the strength of the reasonable articulable suspicion, any erratic or suspicious behavior, and the need for immediate action under the circumstances. Looking at the first factor, the number of officers, the record is clear. This was a single female officer who responded to a vehicle that had two occupants, both of whom were particularly hostile and aggressive. It was in a rural area on the side of the road of a highway. She did have the ability to call for backup, but it was several minutes before backup was able to respond. The second factor, the nature of the crime. As the officer testified, it was an overwhelming odor of marijuana as she approached the vehicle.
And to that, was it an overwhelming smell of burnt marijuana or raw marijuana?
She did not clarify.
Okay. Is there anything in the record to clarify whether it was one or the other? I couldn't find anything. Do you know of anything in the record?
I'm not aware, Your Honor. Ultimately, it was marijuana wax that was found in the vehicle. I'm not sure even if that has a separate smell as well. But the case law generally has not drawn a distinction between burnt and unburnt. In fact, smelling an odor of burnt marijuana is usually, it refers to suspicion that there may be unburnt marijuana further in the vehicle.
True, but usually with burnt marijuana, that's can be a sign that it's a single use versus, and I agree with you, case law isn't really clear, but it seems to be if it's not burnt marijuana, that could be an indication of something beyond just single use. But
yes.
But I haven't seen anything real definitive or clear, but I just want to get clarification on that.
And I agree, an odor of unburnt marijuana would probably strengthen the suspicion in this case.
And you would say that because it's unburnt, meaning not single consumption?
Correct.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So let me just back up for a second. So why does the odor, just start with odor of marijuana, not overwhelming odor of marijuana. So why does the odor of marijuana play a role in the flowers factors for the path search?
Because it's going back to what the nature of the suspected crime is.
Right.
And in this case, drug possession is a crime of violence. That is what she suspected was going on that led to the seizure and ultimately the pat-down.
So you interpret crime of violence as being armed and dangerous?
Yes.
Wait a minute. So you said crime of violence?
Yes.
But it was suspicion of drugs. Those are two different things, aren't they?
Right. But even fifth-degree possession under statutes, for example, dealing with firearms, considers it a crime of violence. If you've been convicted of fifth-degree possession, you're ineligible to possess a firearm.
Right, but what the officer had here was just suspicion of marijuana.
Correct.
How does that lead to a crime of violence? I'm failing to see the connection there.
I'm drawing the connection that it's recognized there's a nexus between drug use and possession of firearms or guns.
Not necessarily drug use. The connection is more with drug dealers.
Right.
That you've got you can have the inference that there are going to be weapons of some kind.
Absolutely.
And that's why I think it's key to determine, because especially on the second issue of the nature of the crime and whether there's reason to believe the suspect might be armed. And that's where I'm struggling is what objective evidence is there in the record or inferences that the police officer may draw, a reasonable police officer may draw, that these people may have been armed based on what evidence or what circumstances here?
What really sets this case apart from the average stop or average response by law enforcement is that these were two people that were particularly aggressive and uncooperative with an officer who was there on a motorist assist. This was not someone who was pulled over for a traffic infringement and might reasonably be a little bit irritated or a little upset that they had been stopped for other behavior. This was someone who was responding to a clear accident, and they're met with two people that start yelling at them, start accusing them of violating
her.
Correct. Start accusing her of violating their rights. It's a particularly hostile response that you wouldn't necessarily expect under the circumstances.
Well, the hostility didn't start until the officer commented and started inquiring about the marijuana, right?
Not entirely.
I missed that. So where do you see the hostility starting?
Yes. In Exhibit 1, which contains the police report, she did indicate that immediately on approaching the driver, who at that time was out of the vehicle, he was standoffish, he was reluctant to answer questions, that she had some concerns about his cooperation. Your Honors, there's three other factors as well in the Flowers test. The strength of the reasonable
Right. I just want to make sure. Is that all you're relying on to support the idea that the officer suspected that he may be armed?
The officer relied on the fact that it was a strong odor of marijuana, that there was a clear hostility, the fact that she was outnumbered.
Well, that goes to the first factor, though.
Right. It is a gun-drug nexus, most of all. She also recognized part of the reason that she conducted the pat search was because she was going to place respondent in a squad vehicle or another vehicle while she conducted the search.
Now, I have a question about that, too, because she said that she did that because it almost sounded like that was her typical policy, if she's going to be doing that. But if that's her policy to separate people, I mean, does she do that, like, if it's a stop for running a red light where there's nothing? How does that tie to the idea that somebody might be armed or dangerous?
She testified that she puts people in other vehicles when she's about to conduct a search of the vehicle. So to begin with, there would have to be some reason to believe that there's something of evidentiary value in the vehicle. So it wouldn't be a standard procedure on just an ordinary traffic stop. She testified that it was there for her own safety as well as for the respondents. If she's going to have someone sit down in a vehicle, safety would dictate anything in their pockets. Common sense, really. I think that you wouldn't want to make someone sit down if they have a knife in their own pocket. It could poke them. Your Honors, the other factors in the Flowers test, the strength of the reasonable articulable suspicion. Again, the fact that it's an overwhelming odor of marijuana means that we're past reasonable suspicion at this point. We're into probable cause that a crime's been committed. The erratic behavior, again,
and hostile. So you make that inference based on the overwhelming. Again, I'm just parsing your phrases a little bit because you talked about just odor earlier, and now we're up to overwhelming odor. And is that because from overwhelming you infer quantity? So this is a dealer quantity of marijuana?
No, Your Honor, I'm talking more about the suspicion that the officer had. It wasn't, well, I smelled many things, and potentially among them there was something resembling marijuana. It was clear and distinct. What she was smelling was marijuana without question.
But you referred to probable cause, I think. Maybe I missed that. And I guess I am alluding to, and I'd appreciate it if you'd address it, comments in Ortega, which indicate that, well, obviously not all possession of marijuana is an offense. It is the small quantities, a petty misdemeanor.
Correct. And that is the law. If you're possessing a small amount of marijuana, it is a petty misdemeanor. It's not punishable by incarceration.
It's not even probable cause to arrest someone.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And the respondent was not searched incident to arrest in this case, which is really what the holding in Ortega was about. Ortega was a passenger in a vehicle where there was an odor of marijuana. He spoke to the officer and voluntarily produced a small amount of marijuana that was on his person. He was then subsequently placed under arrest, and a search incident to arrest was conducted. So Ortega is about the search of a person. It's not about the search of a vehicle, and that's a really important distinction. The footnote in Ortega was essentially the Supreme Court taking an opportunity to address continued reliance on a case called Wickland. Wickland stood for the proposition that possession of any amount of marijuana would give rise probable cause to search someone. Since that was no longer the case, the court just took a moment to recognize that. But it really doesn't get any clearer than what this court said in State versus Bolio last year. Ortega does not stand for the proposition that a police officer lacks probable cause to search a vehicle based on the smell of marijuana alone.
But Bolio was an unpublished case.
It is.
So it's not precedential.
No, but it is, I think, with language that clear, it should be persuasive.
Is there any analysis in Bolio that distinguishes between the probable cause needed for an arrest under Ortega and the probable cause that you would have to have for an automobile exception?
It may have been addressed briefly, Your Honor. It did not go into as much detail as we would have.
And I guess that's the piece of it that troubles me, is that if you have analysis in Ortega that says no police officer can distinguish with their nose a petty misdemeanor quantity from a criminal quantity for purposes of search incident to arrest, does it make any sense to say what they can distinguish between the two for purposes of an automobile exception? And if there's no analysis to the contrary, I think that maybe what you're asking for is you're looking for a published decision that does that analysis and somehow distinguishes automobile exception odor from the odor in Ortega.
There are a few things to consider when we're looking, though, at the difference between a person and a vehicle. First would be the policy reasons that justify searching a vehicle. It's a lesser expectation of privacy versus a person. The other thing to consider would be, in a vehicle, the threshold for a criminal offense, small amount of marijuana, would be anything more than 1.4 grams. I think it would be very, very difficult for an officer to determine by smell alone whether that threshold has been met. Versus a person by themselves, small amount of marijuana is anything under 42.5 grams. There can potentially be different reasons to believe someone might be committing one versus the other. Your Honor, it also it's also just noteworthy that Ortega, by its own holding, is again limited to that searches incident to arrest. It's right there in the language that respondent is relying on. Specifically, probable cause to suspect that a person possesses a non-criminal amount of marijuana in and of itself does not trigger the search incident to arrest exception. So what this court would be doing if it upholds that Ortega footnote, it would be extending Ortega to this case. It wouldn't be maintaining
the status. But the alternative is also potentially a change in the law, too, making distinctions between search and to arrest probable cause and odors for purposes of automobile exception. Either way, it's a new rule, and it arguably extending Ortega is a much more narrow new rule than the alternative.
It could be a more narrow rule, Your Honor, yes, but I agree it would be a new rule. The standard right now, I think it's limited by Ortega's plain language.
Do you think it's even necessary to get there, given the charges in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. There's critical impact, if I'm reading the court correctly.
Well, my question is, I believe he was charged with what was found during the pat search.
Correct.
And not what was found in the search of the vehicle.
That's right.
So the exclusionary rule would preclude the evidence from the vehicle that he's not charged with. So that's my question, is it even important to address that if the charge here relates to what was in his pocket on his person?
Yes, Your Honor, because he would not have been taken out of the vehicle had the officer not planned to search the vehicle. That's what led to the initial seizure in this case, leading to the pat-down and therefore the discovery of the substance.
The extension of...
If the analysis is all about the exclusionary rule, then I still don't see the connection. Whatever the reason was that the officer asked the person to get out of the car, once you do the pat search, if that's upheld, there's no exclusionary rule that would apply to the vehicle.
I believe what the court was relying on is if there was no basis to order the respondent out of the vehicle, there was no basis to do the pat search. Therefore, any fruit of the pat search would have to be suppressed. Your Honors, the district court misread Ortega, applied Ortega's dicta about searches incident to arrest to a case that does not involve a search incident to arrest.
Right, but on that point, Counsel, Wicklin was a search incident to arrest case as well, and that one had been applied to cases such as Hodgins, Schultz, and Pierce, which were automobile exception cases. So if Wicklin has been applied, a search incident to arrest case has been applied to automobile exception cases, why, by corollary, can't we extend Ortega which was a search incident to arrest case, apply that to automobile exception cases?
Your Honor, I apologize. My time is up.
No, you can go ahead and answer the question.
Your Honor, Wicklund has been used many, many times since its inception. However, the case that the Court of Appeals was using to further distinguish it was a case called Martin from 1977, which held that you can't arrest someone and then search them incident to arrest based purely on the smell of petty marijuana. Finding that on somebody's person. The subsequent cases that address drug odors have come after Martin, after that distinction was already drawn. Schultz and Pierce, which were cited in my brief, are from 1978 and 1984. Those are the cases that remain today, still upholding that a smell is sufficient to trigger the automobile exception and that odors give probable cause to search a vehicle.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Okay. Counsel for a respondent, when you're ready.
May it please the court, state, my name's Madison Bruber. I am the attorney for the respondent, Christian Donnelly, in this matter. What started out as a motorist assist on a bad weather day turned horribly wrong for Mr. Donnelly. After going into a ditch on a snowy day, Mr. Donnelly was outside his car trying to get it out of the snow. A trooper pulled up when she noticed the car that was in the ditch. When the trooper approached the vehicle, she did not have probable cause to search the vehicle.
Why not?
Because at that point, it was just a motorist assist. There was nothing out of the ordinary about it. As the trooper testified at our contested hearing, it was a snowy day. She had performed many assists. It was very cold and very icy. Many cars were in the ditch. So at least at that point, there was nothing out of the ordinary about the car at least being in the ditch.
Right, but what I'm really getting to is the odor, overwhelming odor of marijuana.
Correct, Your Honor. At this point, it's the respondent's view that the overwhelming odor of marijuana should not allow probable cause to search the vehicle.
Why not?
Well, looking at Ortega and dealing with cases like that, there is an exception at this point for the search incident to arrest. Part of the reason we're dealing with this case right now is it seems to be intertwining the search incident to the arrest and also the probable cause to search the vehicle. You kind of can't get one in this case without having the other.
Well, why can't you? This is not a search incident to arrest case. This is a automobile exception case that we have here, just as a ton of unpublished cases that have said you don't need the smell of marijuana is enough, is sufficient probable cause to search an automobile. It's not enough to search a person, but it's enough to search property.
That is correct, Your Honor. And
that does seem to be a distinction there.
There is, I believe, a distinction from this case compared to the other cases that have said that. It seems to always be in those cases that it's odor of marijuana plus another aspect. So if
you have very, very agitated, hostile car occupants almost right from the get-go who get worse when the officer says, "Hey, I overwhelmingly smell marijuana. Who has it? Where is it? Show me."
I think there needs to be a distinction drawn with that as well. Trooper By, in her police report, which was submitted as an exhibit and also during testimony, agreed that eventually Mr. Donnelly was trying to get the passenger to cooperate.
Right. I know you point to that, but there's a lot of evidence in the record, counsel, that these two people were extremely agitated, very, very hostile to the officer. Would you agree with that?
The trooper also said, though, that it wasn't...
Would you agree with that, counsel?
No, Your Honor, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't agree that these two people were not hostile and agitated?
I believe the passenger was. I believe Mr. Donnelly was much more reasonable with the trooper.
Well, we're talking a scale, but he was agitated. He was not very... He was agitated as well.
The trooper also prefaced it with saying, though, that people who get into accidents are in the ditch.
I understand that. I understand your arguments, but I do take issue with... I mean, you don't even mention the word overwhelming, which is what the officer said, and there's a lot of evidence in the record, including from the trooper's report, that they were agitated. Let's put it this way. The officer called for backup. There's a reason why an officer would call for backup, right?
I believe at the point that backup was called, she was planning on arresting Mr. Donnelly anyway when that happened. The tow truck was already there at that point.
Right, but you have two agitated people here, right?
According to the trooper, yes, they were both agitated.
Thank you.
Does it matter the distinction between the time when you would say that the trooper decided to search the vehicle and the collective knowledge of law enforcement at the time the vehicle's already searched in terms of probable cause?
Absolutely. I think there's a direct correlation about when the officer decided to search the vehicle, when she decided to pat Mr. Donnelly down, and when backup was called.
What's our authority as to the relevant point in time we look at for determining probable cause for a search?
I think that would be more of a totality of the circumstance.
And I guess I'm getting at this because if you pat search somebody and find a drug paraphernalia, that might be another extra to add to overwhelming or to add to hostility.
That would be correct. However, in this case, it seems like, again, that line is blurred between what created the pat search. And the pat search only happened because of the smell of marijuana. I understand that the court is looking at the behavior of the respondent and also the passenger in that matter. However, those two things separate don't necessarily go hand in hand, I guess. Is
right, but we need, like you said, we can look at the totality of circumstances. We're not looking at aspects in isolation.
That's correct. I guess my other point is, though, however, a lot of the cases that have upheld the odor of marijuana search of a vehicle also have had other aspects as well. So if we look at Wickland, that was still when any amount of marijuana was illegal. If we look at Ortega, there was nervousness of the passenger. The driver even consented to the search of the car in itself. I know the state brought up Bolio. However, there were open bottles within the car and then also erratic driving behavior.
Well, we have more cases than just Bolio. There are quite a few out there.
I understand
And they all have followed that rationale, that analysis.
But all of them still have something more than just smell of marijuana.
Well, it seems that we have more than just smell of marijuana here, too.
I guess I also want to point out, however, that the stop, it wasn't a stop. It started out as a motorist assist. Most of these cases, at least the cases I've gone over, have never started out as a motorist assist. They've always started out as some technical violation, driving behavior, something a little bit more substantial than just basically a car being in a ditch.
Right, and you're right to note in your brief that that alone doesn't give the police the ability to search the vehicle. It has to be something more. But that occurred here when you had the overwhelming smell of marijuana, agitation and resistance by the occupants.
I think it's also important to note, though, that the agitation happened more or less when the trooper decided to search the car. I understand Mr. Donnelly was a little standoffish to begin with, but only questioning happened when the trooper decided to search.
Isn't that more suspicion?
The trooper decided to search. The suspicion after, she already had the suspicion at that point.
Right, but when she expressed her suspicion, that's when they became even more agitated, even more defensive.
But the suspicion had already been formed, and I think that's an important part in this case.
Right, but why wouldn't that response further support that initial suspicion? It seems like it would.
I understand where the court's coming from with that. However, I believe that the suspicion had already been formed, and that's all the trooper was going off of at that point.
Was just the initial suspicion? So anything after that doesn't matter? That doesn't make sense.
I don't believe anything after that doesn't matter. However, I believe once the initial suspicion happened, the trooper had already made her decision to search.
So what's the relevance of that then?
I guess that the relevance is she didn't look at the totality of the circumstance and everything. She created her probable cause based off of just smell alone and then behavior that happened after she said she was going to search the vehicle.
But we're looking at it from an objective officer's point of view, not what we're assuming she subjectively thought. So we can look at all of the totality of circumstances.
And that's understandable. However, I believe her suspicion was already created when she said she was going to search the vehicle. I don't think anything after that mattered for her at that moment.
So, counsel, I'd appreciate if you turn to the PAT search.
Yes, Your Honors. The search of the vehicle and the PAT search of Mr. Donnelly are blurred. The fact of the matter is that the trooper searched Mr. Donnelly before searching the car. The smell of the car is what the trooper used as probable cause to justify the search of the vehicle. However, the vehicle was not searched first. Mr. Donnelly was. This is problematic. It is held that the odor is not enough to justify a search of a person without a warrant or some other exception. There is no exception in this matter, as the PAT search does not fall under the reasonableness of a Terry frisk. As the state's kind of already gone over, there are five factors, really, that the court looks at to justify the reasonableness of a PAT search. The number of officers involved, I believe that this does not support the search.
Why not?
The trooper acknowledged that Mr. Donnelly was telling the passenger to cooperate at that point. Mr. Donnelly was cooperative.
Right, but the fact of the matter is you do have an officer that's outnumbered 1-2.
That's correct, but also at this time, the tow truck person was there. The passenger
That's not an officer. That's not a peace officer. That's a third party there.
That is correct. However, the passenger was removed from the vehicle and told to stand by the tow truck.
Right, but
she did do that.
But that factor looks at the number of officers. It doesn't look at other individuals there. What about the second one with respect to the suspect being armed?
I don't believe that this supports the search of Mr. Donnelly. At this point, the only real indication that the trooper had of any criminal activity was the smell of marijuana. Marijuana can run the gamut for charges in Minnesota at this point. It's a petty misdemeanor, it could be a misdemeanor, it can go all the way up to a felony. At this point, the smell in itself does not actually indicate how much marijuana would be in the vehicle. At this point, the trooper didn't know if she would be writing a citation for a petty misdemeanor or bringing larger charges. And I don't necessarily believe that there's a nexus in this case between the use of marijuana and also any dangerous weapons being in the vehicle.
What about other things that might pose a danger? Hypodermic needles,
again,
sharp objects, anything that...
At this point, it was only the smell of marijuana. At most, there was marijuana in the car. There was no indication that there might be any other
But the
drugs.
Question being, what was reasonable for an officer to suspect based on an overwhelming smell of marijuana and the way that they had reacted to that point? Is there anything that would be reasonable to suspect pose a danger to the officer that would then justify a Terry frisk?
I don't believe so under being Mr. Donnelly being armed and dangerous, especially when Mr. Donnelly was cooperating at that point.
Well, I'm not so sure cooperating that might be a close call there, but I have a question in terms of the district court relied on the fact that there were no weapons in view of the area or in the vehicle, and that seems to be an erroneous application because case law makes it clear you don't have to actually see weapons. I mean, by nature, people who deal in drugs will often hide weapons. They'll be close by, but they'll often hide them so that they're not seen.
So I believe the district court was trying to get at there was nothing in plain view that would allow the trooper to know in that moment. I think in many of those cases, we also have troopers looking at past criminal history and things like that to know more about any real drug activity or drug dealing that weapons might actually be connected to. I think it was being viewed as the car was in the ditch and there were just two people there and just a smell of marijuana at that point that the district court was looking at.
So we've gotten an overwhelming smell of marijuana. We don't know if it's burnt or whether it's raw marijuana, but you've got that and you've got two agitated passengers and who become even more agitated after they're confronted with the allegation that they have marijuana in the car. And it gets to the point that the officer calls for backup. The purpose of the Terry stop is to allow an officer to pursue an investigation, which, as you mentioned, would be the search of the car without having any fear of any violence. When you look at the purpose of the Terry stop, why isn't that met here under the five-factor flower test and all the surrounding circumstances here?
I believe we also need to look at the other factors involved as well. I think when we look at the fifth factor, the need for immediate action by the officer, we have a car that's in a ditch. It's not going anywhere. She could have left the passengers in the car and radioed for backup at that point. She could have even gotten a search warrant at that point. It's not like the car was going anywhere. The car was also going to be towed, so she would know the movement of the car if she allowed it even to be towed at that point.
Well, but couldn't the passengers have just hightailed it? Couldn't they have run away, gone in separate directions? That happens quite a bit in these cases.
I understand that, but I don't see that coming out of the facts of this. It seems like they were quite concerned about the car, and at that point, there was nothing that the officer had done to really... It wasn't until the parties were confronted that there was some uncooperative behavior going on. During the initial approach, everything seemed to be more or less okay. So I don't think we were necessarily in the realm that they were going to run at that point. See that I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And appellant, you've got 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Regarding the need for immediate action in this case, I would disagree with respondents that the vehicle wasn't going to go anywhere. The need for immediate action addresses both if the officer had a basis to conduct the stop during an earlier time with safer circumstances, as well as whether after the fact there would be an opportunity if there was a safer way to go about conducting a stop.
But that car wasn't going anywhere.
The tow truck was already there, and there was nothing in the record that indicated the car was inoperable. It was just in a ditch. So by the time it was removed and placed back on the road, it didn't appear, at least looking at some of the other evidence in the case, it didn't appear the car would be inoperable.
Well, inoperable is, I think, different than the ability to drive away. I mean, it was in the ditch. I mean, it was not clear to me as to where the car was at the time that this occurred. My understanding, it was still in the ditch. The tow truck had arrived, but the tow truck hadn't pulled the car out of the ditch.
Correct, not yet.
So it wasn't like it was out, and it was ready to go. They couldn't go anywhere.
Right, but by having the tow truck there, the natural inference would be they were going to tow it back and put it back onto the road. So
right, but at that time, when you look at that fifth factor, it talks about the need for immediate action. Where's the need for immediate action there?
Because as soon as the car is towed and put back on the road, they would have the ability to take it and drive away.
But that's later. That's not immediate.
No, but it could be as soon as 30 seconds. If the car is otherwise functioning and it's just at such an angle that it can't be backed out of the ditch, as soon as it's pulled back on the road, which could be 30 to 60 seconds, if they're both in the vehicle strapped in, there's no reason to believe that they couldn't just leave.
I'd like you to address, if you could, the characterization that these two are blurred in light of the cases now in Minnesota State Court that allow for the good faith exception. So to put it plainly or precisely, if an officer has a good faith belief that the odor of marijuana in a car justifies probable cause to search that car, and acting on that good faith belief, ask someone to step out of the car, is that justification in part for the pat search?
It could potentially be, Your Honor, yes. Part of the distinction as well is even if the odor of marijuana doesn't create probable cause, at the very least it creates reasonable suspicion. And reasonable suspicion would allow her to conduct a stop of the vehicle and control the movements of the driver by getting that person out of the vehicle as well. And subsequent to that, it may be necessary under the circumstances to do a pat search, even if she wasn't planning on searching the vehicle. If she is having that person out, walking about while she's working with the other individual instead. Again, given the tremendous hostility, given the unusualness of that response to someone who's there clearly to render aid, doing a pat search for the officer's own protection, I think is entirely reasonable under the circumstances. And unless the court has further questions, I'll yield my remaining time.
Looks like we have no further questions for you, counsel. We very much appreciate your argument today and the arguments of both counsel. The matter was well briefed and well argued. We will now take this matter into submission by the court, and we will issue a decision within the statutory time frame. So thanks so much. With that, we have completed our oral calendar for today, and we will be in recess. With regard to our calendar, we will conduct a very informal question and answer session. I understand we have some visitors in the courtroom. I want to check with my judges. Do we need a quick break? Okay, we will take a very quick break. Please settle yourselves in. We will be back within, 3 to 5 minutes, and then we'll engage in some conversation. Thank you so much for being here today.